Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's October 12th, 2012. You're listening to the best poker cast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We're actually recording on 10-11-12.
10, 11, 12.
Which is pretty funny.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
We should have recorded at 9 a.m.
That's right. It's 9, 10, 11, 12 at the Ante Up Podcasts.
Or maybe 8. You can't do 8:90. That would be a funny time.
8:90. Yeah, I was thinking about this the other day. This is the last year we'll be able to do that whole 12, 12, 12 is coming up. And after that, there is no 13, 13, 13.
Right.
You know, unless you're talking about... No, you just can't. So
we should have a 12-12-12 party then.
Yeah, we should. We should have the Cremenium, the Numenium, or whatever, New Millennium, or whatever the hell that was.
Sounds like a new heavy metal band. Opening for Slayer tonight, Cremenium.
So how did you enjoy your week off from the PokerCast?
I did. I had fun. I was out of the country with some buddies. First Wolfpack trip I ever took in my life. A bunch of guys had a good time, and we played Chinese poker quite a bit. I want to assure our listeners this is not a shameless plug for our great sponsors, Mapsoft, but I have never actually got a chance to play the Chinese 13 card poker app.
Oh, yeah,
that we give away every week on here because I have a Droid phone, and the wife controls the iPad in the house, so I had actually never got to play it, and So the guys I was traveling with love it. They play it like incessantly. They all have it on their iPads. And the thing I liked about it, really cool. Thing I didn't like about it, lost 200 clams.
Yeah, I was going to say, do we have to sign over some of the business? I was figuring
I went to Walk and Roll yesterday to get my lunch, and they're like, we no serve you no more.
What?
You suck at Chinese poker. And that's a real loss there, because, I'm not going to be able to get my $5.35 to chop suey anymore. But, I had a lot of fun with it. They actually, they got the Bluetooth function to work for three of them, so they're kind of connected, which was kind of cool.
Yeah.
And when we didn't do that, we just passing around. We did a big bus tour, and we were on the bus for 5 hours round trip, and just kind of passing it by. It's a great app, and, the one thing, though... I'm always going to shriek over is the royalty sound.
The sounds, yeah.
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 Because every time the royalty came, I knew it wasn't me.
Yeah.
And I knew it was costing me money.
Yeah.
They were even saying that, they were going to make the ringtone for me when I called them. Royalty. But it was a fun app. I really enjoyed it. And, I hope Steve and the good folks there at Massoft come up with a Droid version. Sometimes, so I can actually participate with it more. The guys I was with had all these great ideas for him too, so I'm going to put them in touch with them and try to get it improved. And one of the things they talked about was a 60-second timer.
Like speed Chinese poker.
Yeah, you have to set your hand, which would have helped me a lot because, the guys I was playing with have been playing for years and know all the angles and stuff and took their time setting their hands. And if they had to rush, I'm sure I would have... close the gap a little bit.
I don't think you really want a version created for the Android. It's just going to cost you more money.
Yeah, that is probably true.
I mean, just think about it. You keep playing with these guys, you're just going to keep losing.
Well, I'm killing Phil and Dave and whatever the stock names are on the Droid version. It's just the real people I can't beat.
Yeah.
And then, so kind of the other thing, and this was completely non-Antiope trip, the first one I've ever taken since we started the company, and probably the last for a while, because I just can't be away this long,
yeah.
I realized. But we were at the lobby, and we met this this cute newlywed couple. He's Irish, she's Romanian, and just started chatting, and they asked us how we all knew, and we all said, you know, we're all poker players, and he's like, oh, I love playing poker, I'm not very good, but we have this great home game, and play in the pubs, and started talking about it, and one of the buddies said, you know, hey, have you seen Scott's magazine, and he hadn't. And he's like, wow, you own this magazine? I'm like, yeah. He's like, you have to sign me an autograph. So I signed him an autograph. And he's like, this is the greatest thing ever. I'm like, the greatest thing ever? You're on your honeymoon? Fabulous resort in this exotic country. And the best thing going on right now is some fat American signing an autograph for you. But he couldn't frame it and take it back to all of his buddies. And I actually I signed it to Trevor, the best poker player in all of Ireland.
Wow.
Got it, and he loved that. And I'm like, you know what? Hey, I'm not lying. I don't know a lot of other poker players in Ireland. Now, of course, I know we have some listeners to the show, so no slight to them. But that was kind of cool.
Yeah, I remember. Was it you? We went into Harris Tunica that time. Me and you were walking in and talked to the manager there, and like this guy darts out of his table and runs over and says, "You got to sign his magazine." He like recognized us instantly, and I was like, "Oh my god!" That was the first time I think we ever signed anything. And then I think I signed one for the security guard at Sarasota's One Eye Jack's room once, too. It's such a weird thing. It really is.
When they have no idea who you are.
Yeah, they don't know who you are, but they know they need you to sign it because they see your face in the magazine and they think you're important or something. It's really weird, but I'm always happy to oblige with that. It's weird, but
yeah,
it's cool.
I'll be happy to hear if any of our listeners actually end up playing with Trevor and see this framed in their club.
Yeah.
Well, when I got back, I got a chance to download the Superfan show, and I know you heard that right from the beginning because you actually edited and put it together. But,
right.
You know, first time out of gate, I think it was fine. I mean, I think, obviously, we're having a good discussion about it on the forum at andyetmagazine.com/forum, and I think the big takeout is it ain't easy being us.
No, it ain't easy being us, and the audio is just as bad as when you and I do it. So so it's clear that, you know, it's not on our end. It's just bad audio, Skype audio. It's just what it is. But it was funny listening. I was trying to keep – one of the things that I think people had mentioned, you know, probably had too many people on this one. And I kind of agreed with that because it was hard to remember who was who. And a lot of people wanted to talk, and sometimes they were talking over each other and stuff. So for a first effort, I thought it was really good. I think that, yeah, I think there's some refinement that could be done there. And but overall, it was funny because I left a lot of it out of the show because in the beginning, they're like, this is before the show started. And they're like, all right, so here's what we're going to – well, what do we want to do? And I'm like, what? Didn't you guys spend the last 2 weeks organizing what you were going to do? It took them like 45 minutes before they actually started recording and or actually started the show. So there's like 40 minutes there of like clearing their throats, talking to each other about what they think they're going to do on the show. And I thought it was pretty fine. There was some stuff in there that was pretty good. I thought about putting it at the end as an Easter egg, but it was just too much to go through. I was too busy. Yeah. But it was good. It was nice to virtually have a week off. I mean, I still had to edit it and post it, but it was interesting to have a week off. I mean, 7+ years, you know?
Yeah.
It's a long time without... I mean, you know, obviously we've taken weeks off, but we do two shows another week, so it's not that the effort's not there. It's just, it's weird to just not, on Thursday or Friday, sit down and be chatting with you about whatever it is we want to chat about.
Absolutely. Well, they brought up a couple questions on the show that obviously I want to answer, but before that, I was also thinking, again, you know, the discussion on the forum is, you know, somebody suggested, you know, maybe it would be better if Chris or Scott were moderating it. And, you know, I think we're going to take a shot at this because, you know, we got our Antioch Poker Cruise coming up next month in November. And you're going to be holding down the fort here at Antioch headquarters. So yeah. You won't be on the ship. So, you know, we normally do a cruise recap. And I think the last time that you didn't go, we did this kind of flat, just talking to me about a cruise that, I mean, you're not on it, but you know what's going to happen on it,
yeah,
right? I mean,
yeah.
You could probably tell me right now, what's going to happen on the next cruise. So, but we're fortunate to have a lot of our listeners coming on the November 1. Poker Geek will be on there, Bit Guru, Tietza, of course, Lee Childs. So, you know, maybe I'll try to harness them all together and do kind of a impromptu super fan moderated by me on the cruise ship and see how that format works out. And then
now you gotta remember, Scott, one, you better do a better job than Lehman in the presidential debate or whatever that guy's name is.
Lehman,
whatever, what was that, Lear, whatever was his name, Lear.
Lear, okay.
Yeah, okay. And then two, you have to shut up, which I don't know if you can do that. You have to be quiet because you're just moderating, you're just like making the flow of the conversation go, but you have to keep yourself out of it. Can you do that?
That's true. I thought about that, and here's what we're going to do. We're going to do it over dinner.
Ah, so you'll be chewing.
I'm going to be distracted. I'm going to be ordering 6 or 7 entrees. Probably not even going to be paying attention to them.
So you're going to have a recorder sitting there in the middle of the dining room table while you guys are eating?
Of course not. I'm joking.
Because that would be kind of cool, except for the cutlery all clinking and everything. But
you know, the other thing I thought about that might work is this format, if we can just continue to do it, is maybe we theme it a little bit. And I'm not talking about a special Halloween version of the Superfan Show. But, you know, when they're introducing themselves, a couple of them said, you know, hey, I predominantly play in home games. It might be interesting to get a group of fans together that do play predominantly in home games and have the Superfan Show be just about home games. You know, issues that come up in home games, how you run them, how you handle things. That might be a little bit more interesting than just kind of this free-for-all that we had this first one. What do you think?
I mean, that definitely, you always want to have some sort of focus or path that these guys can all cling to and then go with. And that way, you know, when you're tuning in, you know what you're going to hear for the next 45 minutes or whatever it is. I don't know. I've never been big on although I have listened to some of the the sports talk shows, but I didn't actually witness this. I've never watched Howard Stern or listened to Howard Stern or whatever it is that they do with him. So I really don't know. I've never actually heard a Superfan show.
Instead of listening, it's much better.
Oh, okay. Well, is it available somewhere? I didn't even know it was on TV, but. Anyway, I don't know. I mean, people tune in to hear us, you know, and if they're just talking because they're fans of our show, I don't know. I'm looking for a reaction from the Anti-Up Nation other than
absolutely.
The same. Yeah. Most of the people who posted about it on the forum were the people who were actually on the show. So there was like one or two people there who were, you know, a couple of them didn't like it or whatever, maybe one or two, I don't know. And so it's interesting. I don't know. I know if I was wanting to watch Survivor, and I turned on Survivor on a Wednesday night, and they said, hey, no Survivor tonight, but guess what? All the greatest Survivor people, or people who like Survivor, not even part of Survivor, people who like Survivor are getting around today and talking about random topics. Tune in. I don't know if I would. So it was cool. It was unique. It was different. I want to hear from more people about it. And I think having one of us be part of it would probably help. Like you said, if you were the moderator or something, I think that would help. Because still, your personality's there. You're sort of guiding the show, or my personality's there guiding the show. So
well,
that's something.
I mean, we'll definitely try it out of necessity, out of the cruise.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good idea.
And at that point, we'll have two different versions to compare, and then maybe we don't do another one, or maybe we do a bunch in a different format. So, but yeah, you're right. The key is feedback. So,
and I love the idea of our show getting better, and evolving. You know, and not just always being the same stuff. We try to add things to the show, or things that don't work, we take them off or whatever. And I think this might be something that you do quarterly or semi-annually or whatever.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. Not something you do very often.
Yeah, just for a mix it up
special.
A little bit. Yeah, yeah.
Unlike us, we're not special.
Well, you know, week in and week out, you tend to get stale. But well, they had some questions though. They did raise a couple of questions. They wanted to know if we would answer them. And it's weird. I wasn't sure if we were going to do it this way or if they were looking for an entire show dedicated to some of their questions, but really I felt like we could answer them in a couple of minutes what they had to ask about, so probably didn't deserve a show for these things.
Exactly. I don't think we need to do a whole show on this stuff. And, I think it's interesting. It's like, you know, Scott and Chris are journalists. I'm sure they can go out and find some people that can answer these questions. No, we're not going to do that. We're just going to answer them ourselves.
That's right.
That's how egotistical we are here at ADO. But no, seriously, the two questions that I wrote down, and maybe you have some other ones, the second one, obviously, no one can answer. It's just a subjecture, but I think it would be a good discussion for us to have here. But the first one There was some discussion on how is it possible that there are still online poker sites serving the U.S. market.
And one of the things about that question is it's many layered in that. Are you asking because you want to know why the government didn't seize them and stop them, or are you asking because it's against the law? Because it's not. Yeah. Or at least in all of our interpretations, there is nothing in the UIGEA that says you aren't allowed to play poker online. And there's also nothing in there that says a company that's not in the U.S. that is running a legitimately, you know, sanctioned or regulated online gambling site offshore and or whatever with a bank offshore or something that's not in the American bank system is doing anything illegal by offering it to us. So
yeah, and even beyond that, there's nothing really to say. Even it doesn't have to be licensed.
I mean, yeah.
I mean, really, what's interesting about this is that as you mentioned, the UIGEA speaks nothing about the legality of poker.
Right.
What opponents of online poker have always pinned their argument on is the Wire Act. Now, obviously, the Obama administration blew that out of the water in December. They said that that doesn't apply to poker. So at this point, there's no law, federal law, obviously some state laws, Washington, Utah, but there's no federal law like banning online poker. There's certainly nothing that specifically says it is legal, so you know we're back in that gray zone. But you know, in general, I think again, I'm not a lawyer, but if there's nothing that says something's not illegal, then by default, it is legal, right?
All right.
So as long as these sites are not violating the UIGEA, I think that answers the question. And I think what these companies are doing. You know, you need to avoid U.S. financial institutions, and I'm not an expert, I haven't been depositing money, but from what I understand, some folks, you know, some of these sites, you're actually transferring your money to a bank in a foreign bank, and then they process it for you, and they're not miscoding transactions like PokerStars and Full Tilt did. So, I mean, at this point, they're not violating anything, as far as I can tell. And if they do, I imagine they'll be shut down. But as long as they're not violating anything, they can offer it. Obviously, they're taking a big risk in never being permitted to legally offer, you know, and
right.
Be regulated when it comes. But I imagine a lot of these sites that's a wager they're willing to take.
And here's the other thing, too, is when poker does become regulated in the United States, do these sites automatically get blocked now? Because the regulation will require that any site, you know, and then all of a sudden require them to be blocked through your ISP or whatever, or is that not even the case? Because that's not the case, and they can just keep still offering it anyway.
Well, yeah, and that's a very good point. The summary text from the Reed Kyle bill specifically does address this question, that in that bill, as it's written now, these sites will be officially
illegal, yeah.
And then that changes the landscape, so... but right now, they're not. So, I mean, they're taking a risk by continuing to offer that they're not going to be allowed in a regulated format, and worse, being shut out. But, you know, again, we're seeing, and the next question we're going to talk about is when will online poker return? You know, there's not a lot of optimism out there right now.
No.
And, I can see some of these sites saying, you know what? We'll play the odds. Maybe this thing could drag on for 5, 10, 20 years.
Yeah, think about the money they could make after a 5-year period, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, well, and then the other question is they want to know when we think online poker will return. And, you know, I don't think anybody anywhere can give any kind of close to definitive answer on this.
No, there's no way. I used to have this optimism about this. For some reason, it's so weird because I am pessimistic about everything in life. But for
really?
Some reason, yeah, I know. Isn't it remorable? But I used to be optimistic about this. I don't understand. I always felt like there was a chance. And when they, what always pissed me off too is when they would say, you know, okay, there's this blackout period of 15 months or whatever, and I'd be like, that's crazy. That's so long. You know, I mean, why aren't they gonna get it running now? Or and then I'd be like, that takes forever. And now look at it; it's 15 months since Black Friday already.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So time flies, but I just can't believe it took them over a year to get the deal done and everything, just to get on, you know, PokerStars and Full Tilt and all that stuff settled. It took them a year just to get that settled. when they had them dead to rights. Imagine how long it's going to take for them to get a bill through, pass it, and then have everyone create a legitimate site that's regulated to their standards and everything. It's going to take forever.
Absolutely. And, you know, the point I made on Fifth Street Radio this week, too, is, you know, if the bill stays the way it is, the federal bill, we talked about this before, the states have to opt into it. They're not opting out. So now you've got 50 more times around the country, or a few more if you take away Utah. But, and so that all has to happen as well, too. So, you know, even if you get this federal bill passed, in the most optimistic scenario is it's going to happen during the lame duck session this year. Then you got enforcement regs that kind of, I mean, UIGA, I mean, that took more than a year just for the enforcement regs to be approved.
Yep.
So you do that, and then you start the clock on the 15 months, and then hopefully concurrently the stuff is going on at the state level, but maybe not. Depending on what state you're in, they may decide, you know what, we got potholes to fill here. We don't have time to worry about online poker. And they could take 5, 10, 15 years for the state, you live in, to actually opt in. So,
yeah.
I mean, the best thing we can say is this Nevada thing is going to start here by the end of the year. But
yeah, there's just no way, except for the one state that's doing it, and maybe with Delaware and whatever.
Delaware,
but other than that, I mean, there's just no way for us to guess, and there's no way to put an educated guess on it either, because something has to be passed. That's like asking us who's going to be president in November. You just don't know. There's no way to know, because it's something that has to come up and has to be done. The process has to be done, and it just, I don't know. I really am disappointed in the PPA and all the efforts that between them and all the other sort of push for online gambling. You know, I just felt like the amount of money that people have to push through other legislature from lobbyists, that stuff gets through. But yet we're still here, you know, 5 years after or 6 years after the UIGEA and everything, and we're still with nothing. And it's just crazy. I know we're making progress, but it's so slow. If you told me 6 years ago that the UIGEA would still be the thing that is out there and not altered, not changed, I would have been like, there's just no way. And it is. And so I don't have any hope for it for a long time. I'm sorry to be Downer, maybe?
Debbie Downer. but no, you're completely legitimate in it.
It's so frustrating.
It's not, there's very little opening for optimism right now, unfortunately.
And like you said, I mean, there is that window in the lame duck session that, you know, I mean, Kyle and Reed wrote this bill. Clearly, it's a bill. They're working on it. So if they're working on it, hopefully they're going to get it through. I don't know. I know that Barton thing was, there was some hope for that too, but that's just sort of been sitting there, and now someone's requesting he take his name off it and all this crap. So I don't know. But I do have one question. Do you think you can get worse as a poker player?
Absolutely. In fact, actually, I was talking about this on one of my recent trips. Probably with my new friend Trevor. I was like, and he's like, you know, I did really well the first couple tournaments, and then I started reading and stuff, and now I'm not doing so well. And I'm like, exactly.
Yeah.
Because when you start out, you don't know what you're doing. And you also don't have a frame of reference that you're not doing something well. And then you start learning, and you start learning what you did what you're doing wrong before. You quit doing it, and now you're not doing so well. That's probably not what you're asking, but
well,
yeah.
It's similar, though. I mean, I understand what he's saying, because everyone goes through that, where you really don't know what you're doing, and dumb luck, and people can't put you on hands because you don't know what you like, so you tend to go farther. And then when you start to realize what you should be doing and shouldn't be doing, then you fall into the variance and whatever. But I was watching, as I do every week now, I'm watching the ESPN World Series, and it was day 7, and I believe his name was Danny Wong, and they interviewed him, and he talked about why he liked poker so much, and he said, one of the things I like about poker was, I'm paraphrasing obviously, but he says, you know, that you can never get worse. You can only either stay the same or get better at poker. And Norman Chad made a funny line afterward disagreeing with him. But I thought about it myself. I thought, okay, can you become a worse poker player? And I felt like you could. I felt like you could either not study up on it, not play enough, and get worse than you were at one point, or your mind could erode as we get older and older. And I just wondered if it was possible to be a worse poker player, because you can forget things. You know, I mean, you forget all kinds of stuff. So maybe, you know. Yeah, exactly. If you're not taking your ginkgo, how can you remember, you know, that you're supposed to raise in this situation? Or you know, like with me, I think the peak of my No Limit game was really probably when we went to the World Series together and played in events. That was probably the peak of my No Limit game. I was cashing regularly. I survived a really long time, and if it wasn't one unfortunate bad beat on me, I think I might have even cashed that World Series event. But then I discovered Stud 8. I really liked it. And then our home game, I started to get better at home game because we were calling all these other games, so I studied all these other games. And now my No Limit game, which is still okay, I guess, but it's deteriorated. There's no way my No Limit game is as good as it used to be. So if it's worse, then I've gotten worse at that game. So I think it's possible that you can get worse at poker.
Well, yeah, and there's probably a difference there because you're probably a better poker player still than you were before. Just not as good at a particular form, which is a distinction. And probably another distinction, and it's probably not what he meant, but I think if you don't continue to adapt to the game and continue to learn, you get worse by comparison.
Yeah, by comparison, exactly.
You might still be the same player that you always were and not getting worse, but if other people are getting better around you, your results end up being worse. And that may not be exactly what he said, but I think that happens often. I mean, that's the big debate we have over the young guns and the old guard now, you know.
Yep.
As the game passed some of these old-timers by, because it's different now, and considerable debate, obviously, over that. But even if it's not the style, I mean, you know, you think about your home game. If you keep coming to the home game every Tuesday, and for you, it's a night away from the house and drinking beer and just watching Smoking the Bandit 2 with your friends. And everybody else at the table is going home and reading books and playing and stuff. You know, eventually, that whatever 100 Skittles you put on the table is going to go quicker and quicker every week.
Yeah. And I mean, I like the idea, too, of the game getting better and you, by comparison, getting worse. But I mean, I know what he's saying. He's saying the reason why he likes poker is because as long as he keeps playing, he'll be as good as he is and will never be worse than he is right now, but can always get better and improve. And then that's a sentiment that everyone shares, I think. As long as you're doing anything consistently, you're always going to be that good at it.
Yeah, so let me ask you that. I mean, to me, using that frame of logic, it's no different than anything else.
Yeah, I guess
am I going to be a worse griller tomorrow, you know,
yeah,
than I am now? I mean, I know how to grill a hamburger, so, you know, I can't get worse now. You know, I'm not going to forget. You know, I guess maybe there's a case to be made. It's different than, like, you know, a physical sport like baseball or something, where eventually, you know, you're not going to be able to run the bases. But the same thing happens in poker. I mean, you know, you run the risk of getting dementia at some point. So, I mean, even though you can sit there for hours on end, you might not be able to think properly. So, I guess I don't see how his argument's any different for poker players for poker than any other endeavor.
Yeah. It was just an interesting comment, you know, and I mean, I kind of right away got what he meant, but I started to think about it, and I thought, under normal circumstances, where you're not letting time or anyone else get the best of you, and it's just you as a poker player, can you get worse by playing all the time? Is that possible? And I don't know. I don't know. Maybe it is. Maybe because the game is changing, like you said, that you could, but if it doesn't, if everything stayed the same and you're in a vacuum, could you get worse as a poker player? And I don't know. I think you probably still could. I think you could. I think that bad habits could set in, you know, and you're just used to doing that. You could determine, you know, all of a sudden develop this tell or something. And I mean, I do think it's possible. I understand what he's saying and I know why he said it, but I feel like it's too broad of a comment. I think that there are people out there who just aren't as good poker players as they used to be because of either lack of practice or, like you said, the game is passing them by or whatever it is. So it was just an interesting comment.
Yeah, and the final thing I'll say is it's been a couple of weeks since I poked the binary bench bear. But, you know, I think there's also a potential of tunnel vision.
Hmm.
You know, the more you learn, the more you get focused on reading and start putting blinders out to other aspects of the game that you may decide in your education are not as important, and that could eventually lead you down a wrong path, maybe.
Yeah, yep. But it's just interesting, and it's every week there's something, it seems like, when I'm watching this poker thing, that something comes up, so I feel like that was something I need to talk about. Because, you know, we don't play like we used to. We really don't. I mean, I know whenever you travel, you play because you feel obligated to sit down in these rooms, or a lot of times you're alone. I'm not with you, and so you're looking for something to do at night other than going to a Packer game or a baseball game, seeing a no-hitter and stuff. But, you know, other than that, I mean, you're playing. So, I mean, you get to play a little bit more than me, and I know once a month you definitely play because you proof when you play. So, but for the most part, you know, it's funny. We got into this poker magazine business, and it made us play less. And so I do wonder if we're getting worse by not playing. And I don't know if that's true or not, but I think it's possible. And for him to say that seems kind of weird. All right, our hotline, 813-448-1120. You call us, we use it. We'll give you something cool if we're going to do today for Todd in Indiana.
Hey, guys, this is Todd from Indiana. I'm catching up on some old episodes. Just listening to the conversation you guys had about Full Tilt being bought out by PokerStars and if they should keep the name Full Tilt or if it's a damaged name. I think they should keep the name Full Tilt. I think they will. I work in a pharmacy, and for all the recalls that Tylenol has gone through for many different reasons, people still come in and ask for it. The casual fan isn't going to really realize why they shouldn't go back to it or if they think they shouldn't go back to it. They should just offer 150, 200 times your money back. They'll get a lot of dead money in there, which will bring the more serious players. I think the image, while tainted to the people who, you know, are actively involved in it, there's enough people out there who aren't as involved.
I absolutely love this this comparison. you know, he's right. I mean, we were like kids when this whole Tylenol scare happened, right?
Yeah.
And at the time, everybody's like, oh my God, no one's ever going to pop a Tylenol in their mouth again. Who could trust it? And it's one, you know, a testament to how strong they built the brand before all that happened. And then probably also a testament to how much money they spent into, you know, crisis management and keeping the name going. But I guess my only nit in this argument is that, you know, Tylenol is the name in pain relievers, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess there's a couple other smaller ones, but Full Tilt, I don't think it was ever the name in online poker. If I had to pick one, I would say PokerStars, and I don't even think it was.
Right, so, Party Poker was probably.
So it's not quite the same comparison, but I get where he's going with this. That you know, people have short term memory. They remember the good times, not the bad times sometimes. So I thought it was an interesting call.
I can't believe I'm going to have to say this, but there probably are a lot of people listening to this show who don't even know what the hell he's talking about.
That's probably true.
You know, when you and I were what, we had to be.
We were kids.
Kids. Like, I was like 8, I think, so you had to be like 6 or 7 or something, or 10. We were around that age, right?
I think we were probably younger at that point.
Yeah. So, I mean, I remember being really young when that happened, and what happened was that the people were putting... They were doing something to it. That's what invented the tamper-proof thing. It's what came from.
Yeah, absolutely.
Was it razor blades too? Or I remember something to do with it.
I think it was like some kind of poisons.
But I thought someone else did something with a razor blade in one of them too, or something. But yeah, they.
You know these copycats. No, yeah. One's anything original.
But that's what happened. That's what led to all this tamper-proof stuff. Now that you can't open up all your medicine and everything, you can thank Tylenol for that.
Yeah.
You know,
not Tylenol. The idiots.
The idiots who did. I mean, you can thank them for inventing it. They had to come out with that. to keep their own employees from screwing them, but it's a great analogy, Todd. Nice job on this. So we're gonna give you something cool, right?
Yep, absolutely, Todd. We're gonna send you a classic tournament dealer button from TournamentButton.com, which offers the variety of home dealer buttons with timers built right into them. You can even customize them with your own photo or logo. And be sure to ask about the Anti-Up logo version. And if you do make an order there, use code Anti-Up for free shipping. And remember to call us on the hotline at 813-448-1120, and you too might win a classic tournament dealer button.
Our mailbag comes from Gus Taws all the way over in Aberdeen, Scotland.
And I love Ireland. Maybe he knows Tyler.
I love when I say all the way over, like it's some effort to email us. You know, yeah, he may be 8,000 miles away, but you know, the email button is like a few inches from his finger. So he says, I've recently discovered your fantastic podcast. Thank you very much. Always adding fans. Gotta love that. And he's working his way through the back episodes. He's emailing to inquire about the music we play to introduce O'Malley's Move. It's a catchy tune, and I wondered if it was a song or something you had composed especially. So, here's the answer. I responded to Gus about something else, and I said, I'm pretty sure O'Malley used the same music source that we use for our own music, which was the PodSafe Music Network. And but I'm not sure, I said, so I'll ask him. And then, like, a few minutes later, O'Malley gets back to me. He's like, no, man, I made that myself. Which I thought was really cool. So I guess he may have used, like, GarageBand or one of those sort of programs and actually came up with it himself. Very impressive. I had done that for a while for our commercials back when Derby Lane, we were still at the Times, had bought a spot. And then I had created some stuff with GarageBand, I guess it was, and it was kind of cool. It was kind of wild to have that looping music in there, and you can create your own stuff. You sort of feel like a real, you know, composer or whatever. But you know, hats off to O'Malley. Sorry, don't look for O'Malley's greatest hits coming out anytime soon on iTunes because he just made that one song. So,
well, he's the Jan Hammer of Andy O.
That was. Did you watch Miami Vice when you were a kid?
I did.
God.
You can't tell by the way I dress now?
No, I really can't.
The permanent 5 o'clock shadow.
I wondered if you dressed like that when you were in Cuba, though.
Maybe. Yeah.
I could just see you with a sport jacket with the sleeves pushed up, smoking a stogie.
All right, Gus, we appreciate the email. Remember, everybody else, send your mailbags to podcast@annieupmagazine.com, and we might send you something cool like we're going to send Gus a download of the Chinese 13-card poker app for the Apple products from Smapsoft. Don't have to be a winner and enjoy this great app. Download it yourself by visiting the iTunes store or hang out with a bunch of bunnies that have it.
Our call to the floor this week comes from J-Bob via the AnnieUp forum at AnnieUpMagazine.com/forum. He said, on the last poker cruise, this happened twice. Three cards were dealt to a player in middle position. They were not looked at by the player. This was discovered before betting started. When the four came over, he said to use the third card as the first burn card. I think a misdeal should have been called, as the new burn card was not the real burn card. Was this correct? It took longer to settle the problem than a misdeal would have taken.
All right, here's what Jody said. There's no reason to punish the other players in the hand because the cards were sticky out at sea somewhere near the Bahamas. It was agreed on by all players at the table interested enough to comment that the player with three cards indeed had not seen those cards. I know this because I was at the table making the ruling, which was quick, very quick, much quicker than reshuffling and dealing a new hand. Everyone had two random cards, unknown to anyone else, so we treated it like an exposed card during the deal. By the way, I just answered a question that mentioned the holy order of the cards. That doesn't exist. Two random and unknown cards per player means play poker in my room.
I still like the holy order. I really do. I like the holy order. I'm sorry.
It's interesting how our mind works and stuff. So, I mean, I can mock you for enjoying the holy order just as much as you can mock me and Jody for thinking it's ridiculous.
But it's funny, and it's fun to talk about. And, you know, the other thing, too, is, you know, it's just there are some rules that are in the TDA or Robert's Rules or whatever that specifically talk to preserving things, but yet holy order doesn't exist. So whatever, you know, we won't get into it. But
I do want to ask you a little bit about misdeals because, you know, we're all kids at one point, you know, playing freeze tag or kickball in the street, you know, and do-over was always a popular thing when we got to a contentious part. We couldn't figure out whether somebody was saying, it's just easier, a do-over. And I think we take that mentality into adulthood probably too much. And I think at the poker table, the misdeal is the do-over that we used to play on the playground. And it's just easier. Things are getting too hard. Let's just shuffle the cards up. And, you know, I'm not necessarily criticizing that, but I think Jody makes a good point. I mean, both from an operator standpoint and a player standpoint, misdeals cost you money. They take up time. And, you know, if you can solve the problem without a misdeal, I think I'm a fan of that. And I solve it, I don't mean, obviously you can solve any problem by coming up with any crazy ruling, but if you can solve it to the satisfaction of where there's not just a crying shame in how it's solved, I think we should probably do that in the poker world. I mean, I see a lot of, you know, people where, you know, that sometimes the dealer gets a little ahead of himself, deals too many cards, and there are a lot of times that I see players saying, oh, nope, hey, it's this card, just back it up, right? Mm-hmm. And saves it, whereas I see some other dealers just say, hey, just send them in, I'll just redo it. And I think I kind of want to get away from that, the knee-jerk being do-over.
Well, let me ask you this, a couple of things here. You know how when they do misdeal, not this, I'm talking about when they really misdeal, and the guy turns over his pocket aces and goes, God damn it! And then they say, well, don't worry about it, because that's not the card you would have got it if you dealt it correctly anyway. Okay.
See, you're mocking.
What I'm saying is that...
You're mocking yourself in that.
So. Well, no, I'm not, because you're saying that there is no holy order, so why can't he keep those two cards? Because if you're saying that he's not supposed to get those cards, then there is an order. So why would you say that to him? Because usually it's a dealer who says it. If there's no holy order, then why are you saying that he's not going to get those cards?
What he's saying is if the hand was dealt correctly or could have been salvaged, then if dealt correctly, he would not have gotten those cards. So that wasn't the holy order. The holy order was the cards in the deck. They got mucked up when they were dealing. So now, you're trying to do the holy order in two different ways. That's too much holiness for me.
All right, well, how about this? What if the dealer all of a sudden just felt like dealing to the 2-seat, the 6-seat, the 8-seat, the 4-seat, the 3-seat, the 1?
I like
yeah.
that. Yeah,
I mean, he could deal to anyone he wants to. It's still random, right? But it's convenient to go clockwise really quickly, but there would be an uproar if he dealt.
Yeah, absolutely. But
it's the holy order.
Now we're getting kind of ridiculous here.
Well,
what I'm talking about is, if the proper dealing procedures are take place, but there is a slight mistake at some point, and it can be easily rectified without causing any disdain, we should do that before we just send them back. Because then, not only are you wasting the time on sending it back to the deal, you get those people, oh my gosh, I shouldn't have had pocket aces, and it just gets people riled up.
But the one thing that I will say about the Holy Order, and I just like to talk about it because it's fun, but two more things. One, you know how they back it up sometimes and they put the cards? You notice how they have to put the cards back on the deck exactly the way they're supposed to be, yet there's no Holy Order? Why don't they just grab those cards and put them on top?
People that think there should be a Holy Order, and
I know,
if they didn't do it that way, people would go crazy.
But the floor, yeah, I know, exactly. So,
but it's still random.
It is random. But if we made a rule...
That is a public relations decision. That's exactly what it is. It's, you know what? It'd be a lot easier if people just threw me the cards and I put them on the top and we dealt them out. But I know a bunch of Chris Cassandra's are going, Aah!
That's right. So if they made a rule that there was a holy order... If they made a rule that there is a holy order, there would never be an issue. I'm serious. If they said the deck is preserved, when he's done shuffling it, those cards are your cards, and if you don't get your cards, it's a misdeal. And I know it may take more time, but if there's a holy order, there's none of these issues.
Well, there's none of those issues, but then there's the issue I'm talking about of wasting time and preventing me from getting a hand where I can make money playing and preventing...
let me ask you this.
Of us as poker operators dropping a rake.
I have to disagree with wasting time, because in this indication, let's use this exact one from J-Bob. He deals three cards to the guy in the middle. The dealer can't make a decision to say it is or it isn't one. He's got to call over to the floor. The floor's got to come over, hear the whole story, and redo it. But if the dealer said, oh, three cards, missed deal, grab the cards, shuffle them, by the time he did all that, by the time he even gets the attention of the floor, he could have been done redealing. Easily, because he can make up that rule. I mean, he can make that decision because there is a holy order.
The dealer making floor calls.
But it's a holy order. It's not. It's like if the first card, when he deals the first card and he deals it face up by accident, he knows it's a misdeal and he doesn't have to call a floor to do it. It's a rule.
But then now we're talking aggregate time. And that particular situation, I mean, now you're using the whole luck versus variance argument there. You know, anything can happen in the short term. And in the short term, yes, you're right. It would be quicker for him just to deal out a new thing than call the floor. But when you add it up over the long term, that's where you start to lose the time. If the rule now is holy order and you got to make a missed deal, eventually you're going to lose that time.
Mm,
Eventually, you're
going to
lose that time.
Yeah, like, I will agree to disagree on that, I think. But it's always a cool thing to talk about. I mean, we always talk like this about it because there's always some new thing that comes up we have to discuss about the randomness of the cards.
I'll talk about superstitions forever. Yeah. They're hilarious because, you know, they're superstitions. All right, J-Bob, you know you already got something, but everybody else, email your call to floor questions to us at podcast@aniamagazine.com, and if Jody answers them, we'll put them on the show, and it'll send you something great, like a deck of J-Design playing cards, official playing cards of Ante Up. You can pick up your own decks in the Ante Up store at anteupstore.com.
Well, we have a feedback from our good friend Nick Chavarella. He listened in on our show when we talked about that hand where... Gail Bowman was with Kings under the gun and Rays, and then that guy who ends up knocking her out of the tournament eventually too had re-raised all in and then mucked. And he listened to it and he said he wants to comment on it. So why don't you take it from there and then we'll discuss him.
All right, he said I'd like to comment on the situation. First of all, we should say Nick is a poker school and a dealer instructor.
Right, and member of the TDA.
Yep. He said, I'd like to comment on the situation covered by the big blind folding, thinking they won the hand only to realize another player who re-raised was still in the hand. These situations are common occurrences that should never happen. If we take a close look, we will discover that a complete breakdown of proper procedure has occurred. Number one, the under-the-gun raiser apparently did not make his re-raise clear. Number two, the dealer failed to announce the re-raise.
Well, the other thing, too, before we get into this, he keeps mentioning re-raise. The under-the-gun was just the raiser.
Okay.
So that's just Gale raised under the gun, and it got to this guy. He re-raised all in, the small blind folded, and he mucked. And then she was sitting there without being able to re-raise. So she didn't re-raise; she just raised. So there's no confusion.
And he goes raise clear. Number two, the dealer failed to announce the raise.
Right.
All right. Okay. Number three, the dealer also failed to protect the big blind from mucking his hand with action pending. Number four, the big blind should never muck until the pot is pushed to him. Five, the floor has no right to ever try to retrieve a hand that was mucked by the owner unless it was properly tabled and erroneously killed by the dealer.
Right.
Number six, we can even look to the other players at the table. There are rules that preach one player to a hand, but because they have a vested interest in the tournament, any player has a right to speak up in the best interest of the game if they can prevent an error from occurring. I do feel that the big blind should only be responsible for his initial $60,000 and not suffer additional financial loss. So in that respect, I agree with the decision of the floor. I do not, however, agree with digging through the muck. How would you like to have a floor person come over to your table, force an opponent to put another $100,000 in the pot, calling your bluff, then dig his hand out of the muck? These tournament situations are a lot trickier than cash games. Forcing players to put more chips into the pot than they intended is a distribution of chips to an undeserving player.
Hmm.
I think it's an interesting take, but I disagree.
The last part?
Yes.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I like everything he said at the beginning is absolutely correct. That's exactly how it happened. The only thing that could have changed maybe is she could have called quicker or something. Even that, though, it makes no difference. She doesn't have to.
I mean, this is... I know the spirit of what he's getting at here. But, I mean, this isn't like some kind of game show where I raise and everybody has to lock in. I heard a raise.
Yeah, yeah.
And wait till it's all green around the table. Okay, move on. I mean, at what point do you... Is it on you as a player to make sure everybody at the table has heard your action?
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, if it was a raise, then yeah, that's a problem.
Plus, the other thing, she raised a 60,000. There were 60,000 chips out in front of her when he was playing his hand. I mean, what else does she have to do? Put a flag up and a air horn?
Yeah, that's my point there.
But. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, the rest of it's procedure, and certainly I think we all agree on you know, putting a worm on the hook and throwing it in the muck and trying to catch the right cards out. That's ridiculous. But the distribution of chips to an undeserving player, that could go both ways, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. And
because I think the argument we had on the show was that this is a player that should have been. It's hard to say should have been out of the tournament. Because obviously, we should have run the cards out, and he still had a chance to win. But so by letting him keep his chips, that's also an distribution of chips to an undeserving player.
That's right.
Which you can make the argument to that, right?
Right, because essentially, you're taking that $1.3 million and distributing $1.24 million back to him. You know what I mean? Essentially, and she's not getting anything but her initial raise. That she got some chips, but. She was deserving of more than that, or a chance at more than that. and they took that chance away from her.
How do you say she's an undeserving player?
Yeah.
What did she do wrong in this situation?
That's right.
I mean, she announced Ray. I mean, I didn't watch it. You watched it.
Right.
I assume she announced raised. She probably didn't shout it from the mountaintops, but announced it, put her chips in the middle. She's not undeserving at this point.
Right. She did nothing wrong.
If anybody's undeserving, it's the guy that announced a raise and mucked his cards. No one else at the table did anything wrong. Now, I'm not trying to heap too much on this big blind, but if you're looking to assign blame here, he's the only one that did something wrong here.
That's right. And I wrote a little something about this for our upcoming issue, and within that I made these, you know, they cite all these rules. And the World Series basically used the TDA. They have some of their own procedural rules in there too, but the rule is that you want to do what's in the best interest of the tournament. But really, to me, at that point, there were a couple hundred players left or whatever, and I feel like, let's say there's 200 players, 199 of them were mistreated. 109 of them, that could have eliminated another player, gotten them one step closer to money, one step closer to whatever. And of course, as you'll find out, this guy ends up going on to knock her out in 10th, like, 2 days later or whatever it is. And he's at the final table right now. He could be a world champion. And he got a second chance. And that, to me, is disenfranchising not only her, but even the players who were still alive at that point. I don't agree with that ruling. The first rule is that the tournament director should be able to make a decision that, whatever, but really, this other rule about, protecting your cards should go a lot higher up. And if you didn't protect your cards, I'm sorry. Well, people are playing for millions of dollars. You're not the only one playing for the millions of dollars here. You need to protect your hand or watch the action or whatever. An honest mistake is an honest mistake, but this is different. Now she's getting penalized for that. It's just not right.
All right. Well, hey, Nick, we appreciate you keeping an eye on it for us because obviously this could go multiple different ways, which makes it fun, right?
Yeah.
But we're into some housekeeping here. We got two Annie Poker Leagues going right now, and we got some interest from some other rooms, so hopefully we'll have some more to announce pretty soon. But right now, head out to Dover Downs in Delaware and Tampa Bay Downs here in Tampa, Florida. And at Dover, you can play in the 7 p.m. Wednesday night tournaments through December 12th for a chance to win an Annie Poker Cruise Package personalized champion league champion jacket. Boy, I gotta fix that right now. Personalized league champion jacket. From Antiup, and the same thing at Tampa Bay Downs, though a tournament all the way through December 31st that you can qualify for, and they'll have a free roll on January 1st, also awarding the same Antiup Poker Cruise Package and personalized League Champions jacket.
Oh my God, you had more stuff to talk about there? The notes ended and you were still talking.
I forgot to put the website in there. Go to antiupmagazine.com/leagues for all the details.
All right, there you go.
There we go.
Hey, we're still looking for ambassadors in Canada. You can apply at antiupmagazine.com/ambassadors. So those of you in the Great White North who want to be part of the magazine, fill out an application, and we'll see if we can get the ball rolling. And, hey, you need a vacation? Why not take an Antiup Poker Cruise? 5 great cruises on tap this year and next, leaving from Baltimore, Port Canaveral, Miami, New York City, and Tampa. Get all the details, including how you can win your way on board at antiupcruises.com. And we got a promotional video on there too, which is really pretty cool. One of our friends from the Windy City Poker Championship production crew got in there and helped us out on the ship. It looks really cool. I really like it. And we also have upcoming giveaways, again, at Dover Downs, Derby Lane here in St. Pete, and Tampa Bay Downs in Tampa. So a lot of great ways to get yourself on our ships with us. All right, Scott. Tell me what happened on the Antiup News Desk this week.
All right, the Isle of Man Gambling Supervisory Commission has granted Full Tilt Poker a gaming license, and the online site will relaunch on November 6th with Gus Hansen as its first celebrity ambassador.
That's the other thing, too, about what we talked about earlier with the whole Full Tilt versus Tylenol thing. The other thing that helps this, too, is PokerStars is running it now.
That's true.
And you can trust them because they did everything right. They had their player funds segregated. They didn't get into a hole. And you can trust them. And then if you watch the letterer files, you know that Gus Hansen was the one that was, really trying to get the players paid back too. And he's somebody that you can look to be an ambassador. He was always pro players and everything like that. So some good stuff going on there, and hopefully that will start to erase some of the hurt and problems.
Yeah, and I hope some of our international listeners will let us know what the site's like if they decide to play on it in November.
Yeah.
And see how it is. It'd be great.
All right, PokerStars has struck a deal with the Hippodrome, the United Kingdom's largest casino, to have the room refurbished and rebranded as a PokerStars brick-and-mortar poker room. That's pretty wild.
Yeah, it's almost kind of interesting that it's taken this long for this to happen. But, you know, it just kind of makes sense for an online site that has some money here to kind of help out in a brick-and-mortar room. And now they have a go-to place for a lot of their events.
So it's not really PokerStars' room. It's just that it's the PokerStars room, right?
Yeah, I get the impression it was a marketing agreement.
It's like the World Poker Tour for however long it was that they had the room at Foxwoods. It was the World Poker Tour poker room, but it's not. They don't get any money out of it. They just get the deal.
Right.
So, but yeah, pretty cool.
All right, and finally, a 48-year-old poker dealer from Florida has launched a write-in campaign for president of the United States. David Goosen is basing his campaign in Rhode Island, where he thinks he might be able to win a few precincts.
I think he dealt on our first cruise, didn't he?
I don't know.
That's pretty wild. What the hell is... Oh, man.
I mean, you hear the electoral college strategy out there. People talking about, hey, you need to put the money in Ohio and Florida. This guy is taking it to a micro level. I live in Florida. You know what? I go up to Rhode Island. There's only 7 people that vote up there. I might be able to actually win a precinct. And then boost his campaign for the future. I like the way he thinks.
I always get a kick out of the write-in candidates or whatever they call them. You go in to vote, and you got your Republican and your Democrat and your Independent and Tea Party or whatever it is, and all of a sudden you got this huge list of people running for president. You're like, who are these people? It's like, I don't put my name on the list. Just when all you got, it's a certain criteria you got to meet, but it's just, it's hilarious.
Yeah, those aren't even the write-in candidates. I mean, he's a write-in.
Yeah, yeah.
He's on there. You got to know who he is to go in there and write his name down.
So. Yeah.
But, you know, at the end of the day, this is what's kind of cool. I mean, this guy, I think he said he's putting $3,000 of his own money in, which I think most people think is kind of ridiculous. But at the end of the day, he can say that he was a candidate for president of the United States.
That's right. That's right. That's right. Hey, so if I'm allowed to vote for myself for president, though, right?
Oh, absolutely.
So if I write my name down when I go in November, I can say I received one vote as for president of the United States.
Yeah, you should go down and demand the supervisor elections release all the names that get votes. And then someday show the grandkids, look, Grandpa Chris was a legitimate candidate. He got a vote.
That's right. I ran for president. That is so cool. I think I'm going to do that. I was the only one who knew I was running for president, but I still got a vote.
Well, I mean, that's not true now. Now you got thousands of people around the world that know that you're running. So
that's true. I'm running. Everybody want to write in and put my name down. I'm going to ask for the results really, see if anybody votes for me. See if anybody wastes their vote and votes for me.
Yeah.
Hey, we get to complete an O'Malley's move this week. Is that correct?
We do.
And they waited a long time for this, too, because they had to go through
as you said, it's been marinating.
Yeah, it's been. Maybe we want to change our mind over those 2 weeks, but I don't think so. I don't think we changed our mind. So.
Not this one. No. Other ones, I do.
Okay, here we go. Here's the episode. We'll come back in a few minutes.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we are seated at a nine-handed, $1, $2, no-limit hold'em cash game. The table is fairly timid with a few tight aggressive players. We have 325 and are on the button. Under the gun calls, under the gun plus 1 and plus 2 fold, the MPs 1 and 2 fold, the cutoff raises to $10 with 200 behind, and we look down at the king of clubs, queen of hearts. Good thing this player's on our right. He's tight aggressive, and we'd hate to play this pot out of position against him. We call, the blinds fold, and the under-the-gun calls. He's the big stack at the table, but isn't very good at all. He got lucky on back-to-back hands to grow a $100 buy-in up to almost 5 big bills. The pot is about $30, and the flop comes the queen of spades, 8 of diamonds, 3 of clubs. This seems like a pretty safe flop. The under-the-gun checks, and the cutoff bets $15 into the $30 pot. This precise half-pot bet seems like a continuation bet more than anything. We make the call, and the under-the-gun calls as well. The pot is now at around $75, and the turn is the Three of Hearts. This doesn't change much. Once again, the under the gun checks, but this time, so does the cutoff. Normally we'd fire here, but we want to exercise some pot control, so we check too. The river brings the Five of Clubs, another inconsequential card, and again, the under the gun checks, but this time, the cutoff makes it $35 to go. What do we do?
All right, oddly, I find myself a little worried about the under-the-gun player here. I know that player is described as weak and lucky, but how much money have we lost to weak and lucky players in our lives, right? but what could he or she have that's worth calling $15 on that ragged flop? And, you know, our other opponent slowed down on the turn. That makes me feel like we're good, but this third person in the hand, it's such a problem for me that even though I think we have the best hand here, I don't think that that I can pop it here and value raise. So I'm just going to call and be happy with this pot.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm just calling. It is hard to imagine, though not impossible, for someone with a monster to check that river because they should be afraid of missing a bet. So I'm going to call with my top pair or second kicker. $35, not that hard of a call to make, I think. So I think that we can call that and think the under the gun's going to fold or just call, because really, if he had a monster, I don't think that he can afford to miss an opportunity to bet there. So I think we're going to call and see if we're going to do okay. All right, let's see what happens.
Hello again. The cutoffs raise pre-flop, bet on the flop, and the river are very nice and tidy, almost too clean. This could very well be a missed ace-king, jacks, tens, maybe nines. He probably would have bet again on the turn with ace-queen, unless he's also wanting to exercise pot control. So the question is, what is this river bet? A bet for value? We think it is. However, we think it's a bet for value with a pocket pair smaller than queens. The only question is, what's the calling station behind us going to do? That's easy. The answer is in the question. He's going to call. We figure we're ahead of the cutoff's range, so we call, as does the under the gun, and the cutoff turns over jacks. We show our king-queen, and the under the gun shows queen-ten. Awesome. Ship it this way. Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley saying sometimes you just gotta call your way into a nice pot. I hope to see you on the felt.
Well, about as we expected here.
Yeah.
No real controversy, I don't think, but I do think it illustrates the power, the difference of having three people in hand versus two at the end. You know, if we were heads up here, we would almost always raise, I think, right?
Yeah, maybe, yeah, yep.
That third person made it hard for us to do it, so I didn't really go back and look at the hand and see if there's a way for us to get down to heads up, but really, I think it shows the fewer people you have in the hand, the easier decisions become.
Absolutely. Minimize the field for a reason. You know, the odds are in your favor at that point with that top pair of second kickers. So, but yeah, I think it's an easy call for $35 there with the amount that's in the pot. And I just really didn't worry too much about the under the gun player just because I didn't think that somebody with a big hand there would be able to check that river. Yeah, good job, O'Malley. And nice job with the music.
Music rocks. All right, a couple weeks ago, I returned to the Seattle area for the first time as an Antioch publisher, not just a mere mortal like I was the first time I was up there, and visited some of the larger tribal poker rooms in the area, and I gotta say, it's definitely an interesting poker place for a poker player to play. When I was on Fifth Street Radio this week, they're like, you know what, I don't really know of any poker up there. Is it really a place that people want to go? And I think the answer to it is, yeah, they've got some really nice rooms up there, but it's the entire poker landscape up there that I find more interesting. You know, you've got several tribal casinos, which I'll talk about. Those are the ones I visited. But they also have dozens of these so-called mini casinos. And there are places, bars, restaurants, bowling alleys, places like that, that are able to offer real live money poker. Now, of course, many of them are very small, but obviously they're convenient. You might be able to walk to them from your house, or certainly you're going to be driving by a bunch of them to get to one of the tribal rooms. But a couple of them are actually big enough to be competition for the tribal casinos. I didn't get a chance to visit them and check them out, but it's there. You have lots of options to play, except of course online, which you know your arm is cut off.
Yeah,
you fire up your computer to play poker.
That's in Washington, but not in Oregon, right?
Exactly, Washington. Right. And then of course, you know, we talk about Pacific Northwest. We got to kind of lump in Oregon there too. Obviously, that was a little farther down. I didn't get a chance to go down there, but there are about a half a dozen or so smaller, more remote tribal casinos elsewhere in Washington, and then of course down in Oregon. There are some more tribal casinos and card rooms. So overall, a lot of options in the area. Not a lot of them that are probably well known, but you certainly won't have any problem finding a game, at least in that Seattle to Portland corridor.
Cool.
The biggest thing I noticed is that it was a $3 max rate in the state, and I believe that's mandated too. That can't be more than that. I could be wrong, but I guess what somebody told me. And most rooms take $2 for the jackpot, so you're looking at a $5 max taken out of every hand, which is quite a deal, to be honest.
Yeah.
You know, down here in Florida, it's $5 going to the rake, and then $2 the jackpot. So you're already talking two extra dollars coming out of every pod down here. And there, you know, almost half of it is coming back to the players in some kind of player-funded promotion. So. Certainly the most reasonable place outside of maybe New Mexico, which I think was very similar to it, that I played. And that makes a big deal, I think. I don't know if it really alters your vacation plans. You know, hey, I'm going to go there because it's $3 rake versus $5 in Florida. But it's something to keep in mind.
Yeah, you know? Sure.
You know, as I told some of the managers, that there's some rooms that I've been to that take an $8 rake in our country. No jackpot rake. That all goes, you know, straight to the house, and you know, you factor in that difference there. I mean, that's huge, particularly for low limit players.
Sure. Think about how much comes off the table in an hour, eight versus five, and knowing that two of it goes back to the player of that five, and none in the eight. So it's remarkable.
Absolutely. Well, let me mention a couple of the rooms I went to, and of course, as I mentioned, it wasn't a complete list. So you know, definitely check out the complete list on our website, annieupmagazine.com. Where we have maps to all of them as well, too. And also, we don't have a map to the mini casinos on our site, but I do believe I have a link to the Washington Gaming Commission that has a list of all the mini casinos as well, too. So you can do plenty of research before you go up to visit. But started my trip at Muckleshoot, one of the more well-known ones up there. Poker manager there is a delightful woman, Gloria Slaughter. She's been there for more than 20 years, she said.
Hmm.
I talked to our day shift manager too. He's been there more than 15, and you know this. That's just shocking to me. In the poker world, that we find people, you don't find too many people that have been in the same room for a generation.
Yeah.
I mean, really, we know managers that don't even last a year in some rooms.
Oh yeah.
So I mean, obviously, it shows that it's a good place to work. Obviously, because they haven't moved on to something else. And also, there's some consistency there over that long too. So you don't have a lot of walking in and wondering whether the room is completely different tomorrow than it is today. So, definitely the largest room in the area, 32 tables. They do fill it all up on some of their big tournament nights. And like it was a big, spacious room. It was in its own walled-off area, which is big for me. I don't like the dinging in the slot machines personally.
Mm-hmm.
Had its own bar in there, which is always convenient. A fireplace even. And you kind of figure in Washington, you got to have that kind of outdoorsy kind of stuff, right? They do lots of promotions. They have two bevy jackpots. They give away $500 and $1,000 high hands on certain days. And another thing that I think more rooms should do, although it's probably a little cumbersome, but they have pagers there, you know, just like you're going to Olive Garden.
Yeah, and they give you the little thing that lights up.
Yeah, and wander out. And particularly at a casino, too, because... You know, they should want you to go out and feel free to go sit at a slot machine or play blackjack while you're waiting for your table, so they get that kind of money. But at least you're not, you know, forced to sit around watching other people. They do two big tournaments a year. I think they're looking to switch the dates a little bit to get better weather friendly on the next one. So I believe that one's going to be a little later next spring. But But nice room. It's a little south of the city, and actually it's the closest one to the airport too as well.
Cool.
All right. So from there, I drove north up to Angel the Winds. Kathy Marsh, another delightful manager up there, and you'll find we have another female manager on this trip as well too. So I mean, this false assumption that poker is a boys club really doesn't work anymore, I don't think. Playing that up in Seattle, but she had a lot of great stories in history. We might even try to get her on the show sometime to tell some of the stories from her long career. But she came there to open that room 4 years ago as a very loyal following of regulars, guests during the week, and then guests come in on the weekends. And this was amazing to me. She is a unabashed neat freak. Every 2 weeks, they clean every card, every chip, and every felt.
Wow.
Can you imagine that?
Wow.
I mean, how many poker rooms have we gone to that probably have never washed the chips?
Almost everyone.
You go to make a raise and you get a whole stack of chips coming with it because they all stuck together.
Wow.
There, as she said, every 2 weeks they clean every single one. And she said, you know, on slow times it keeps the dealers active and stuff. But she just likes players knowing you come in that they're going to have a clean environment to play in.
Absolutely. That's remarkable.
And she's a huge mixed game fan there. So they have a different game depending on the day. But they would have Omaha or Stud. And on Thursday, she does a crazy pineapple tournament that she says does quite well as well, too. You'll notice as I go through this, it's very weird to me that very few of these casinos in Washington have hotels on site.
Yeah.
And they're all, for the most part, they're all making a move to change that. Muckleshoot isn't, but Angel of Winds is got a hotel planned and it should open by the end of 2013. But... yeah, it's hard to find a place to put your head down after playing cards at these rooms.
Yeah.
One that you can is Swinomish. I really made a very strong push to change the name to Swinomish when I was up there. That's what I called it until I got up there. But no, they insist it's going to be Swinomish. A lot of interesting things going on in this room. There's a room farther north. That's smaller, but it's the farthest one I went to. It's an hour and a half north. But you can take a ferry from Seattle up there, and it lets you out right at the ferry station, not too far from the casino. So that's another way of getting up there that I don't know how many poker rooms you can actually get to by ferry. Manager that's really active trying to do some good things there. Right now, it's a small room. It's roped off with the Kino Lounge, but has its own bar. Unfortunately, it's in the non-smoking section of the casino, which is nice. They got plans to make it a little bit bigger. They're going to move the Kino Lounge out. And they just opened a resort attached to the casino in April this year. 100 rooms. Four of them are very large suites with balconies. Wife and I loved that. It was sweet. It was one of the nicest places I've stayed. And they also have a large conference center. They've had MMA fights in there.
Cool.
And they're talking about having a very major poker tournament, and it's a great room for it. I mean, it's one of those rooms that, you know, you can take the walls out and really open it up. So that should be pretty cool when they do it. And hopefully it'll be our tournament. We'll see.
Yeah.
And they also have one of only 9 Callaway club fitting studios in the country. So if you're a golfer, it's pretty cool. They actually took over the fitness center for right now. They're going to build another fitness center eventually, I think. But you walk in there, and they have, you know, this Callaway pro comes in there and fits you for clubs, and they have one of those little big video screens where you can play the ninth hole of Pebble Beach and stuff, and you walk out with a perfectly fit set of clubs.
Man, that's pretty cool. You would never think of, like, something like that happening in a casino or even a resort. You know, you always think of it as just country clubs or whatever, but there's only 9 of those places, and they have one. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. And, well, I mean, there's a lot of crossover between golf and poker, and I think we're starting to see a little bit more of it as we go, and this is a perfect one here. I mean, they don't have a golf course on site, but it's very close to one. But and very affordable fine dining. We had a great dinner up at the restaurant there, and I think, as I mentioned a couple weeks ago, we actually won a craps there.
Yeah.
And had a lot of fun. But definitely a nice room for a little getaway. And then you head back down south, and you hit Tulalip, which is another one of the more well-known rooms. Aside from Swinomish, it's the only other one with an attached hotel there, and it's a nice one. It's a AAA 4 Diamond resort. And this room gets lots of action. They have plenty of tournaments and tournament series throughout the year. I think they have one coming up with several pros. I forget the actual name of it, whether it's the... it's not a pros versus Joes, but it's a beat the pros kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that's coming up in March. And again, it's another one of these rooms that's enclosed on its own. Very nice blue felt tables. And again, a good variety of action. You know, when I was up there, almost everybody I talked to mentioned Tulalip at some point. And then I ended my trip over at Snoqualmie, which is east of the city, but very close. It's just about 20-minute drive outside the city of Seattle. The most scenic location. Had a big lodge-like feel. And I thought this was interesting. You know, when I think of Seattle, I think of kind of majestic mountains and things, Mount St. Helens and water. And this was the only one that I thought had a really good view from it. And really, it was a nice view. The poker room was scheduled to expand from 8 tables to 20 and move to a new location where the event center is now. But those plans have been placed on hold right now. And actually, they lost 2 tables since I was there that were replaced with blackjack tables. So it's a small room now, but it is enclosed by itself. Some nice rich red colors in there. And plenty of promotions and tournaments. It's run by our friend Elliot Schechter, who has been a guest on the show before. So folks that used to play at Downstream and some of the other casinos that he's been at knows what kind of room he runs. It's just a little smaller than he's used to right now.
But
a very nice place, and they get some big money players in there on the weekends. That's kind of a whirlwind tour of Seattle poker scene.
Well, you didn't answer the big question, though.
Mm-hmm.
Did it rain when you were there?
It did, but not very much.
Wow.
Yes, we were actually impressed. It was only overcast one day. Last time we were there, we went up to the Space Needle, you know, to do the touristy thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's generally really overcast, and it's hard to see stuff. But we got some real sunny days. Saw a fantastic football game for 59 minutes and 59 seconds. And had a good time. But yeah, it only sprinkled one day, I think. So
wow.
I think we threaded the needle on that one.
Elizabeth,
and you are listening to the Antioch Pokercast. All right, our hand of the week this week comes from Jay from Kansas City. Not his real name.
Oh.
Maybe it's his real name.
Protecting himself?
You know, we have a lot of listeners who are in the Witness Protection Program, and I respect that. If they got nothing else to do,
yes,
might as well listen to the show, right?
Right.
But it's a 1-3 no limit live game. And so, first of all, I got to say, Jay just recently found us, and he listens to us at 1.5 speed on his iPod. So you get through him a little faster.
So if we talk funny, we talk like high-pitched faster? Oh, you always talk high-pitched fast, but I mean, even worse than that?
Yeah, but more, he says, the difference is now that he's listening at normal speed, it sounds like we're both drunk, which he says might be accurate for me.
Oh, jeez.
But you know, he's not the first one that's actually told me that they sped through him on higher speed. I mean, that's somebody that's extremely efficient with their time.
Wow.
I want to listen to the show, but I don't want to listen for 2 hours. Turn the dial up, and I'll get it done in an hour.
So right now, I sound normal.
I'm not sure you ever sound normal, but nice try, though. All right, so back to the hand. It's a 1-3 no-limit cash game at Hollywood Casino in Kansas City. Gorgeous place. They just opened relatively recently.
Okay.
Our hero is in the hijack. Actually, apparently it's on a big seat because it's hijack.
Oh, he spelled it high and Jack.
Yeah. Okay. We're not making fun of him yet.
No. Just so remind me what the hijack seat is.
And here's the thing: we can make fun of him, and he's not going to notice because he's going to listen to it very quickly.
That's true. But remind everyone what the hijack is, Sky. You got. We still have some new listeners. Tell them what the hijack is.
That is one to the side of the cutoff.
And what the cutoff is?
And the cutoff is one to the side of the button.
And it's to the right.
That's correct.
Okay. Here we go.
There's hijack, cutoff, button, small blind, big blind.
There you go.
There you go. All right, so he's in the hijack with about 250, and the villain is on the button with about 300. So it's the under-the-gun player opens for 15, and it folds around to him, and he looks down at queen of spades, queen of diamonds. This is where the analysis comes in.
Well, I'm thinking we have position, and we have some dead money behind us. We want to raise here, because if we just call, now you're giving people with like questionable connecting hands or something behind you a chance to come in for a pretty decent price. So I would probably make it 40 to 45.
45?
Well, because, I mean, he made it 15. You know, you want to really define his hand, like we just said a few minutes ago, about how much it helps to have a narrower field. We certainly don't want the big blind to say, you know what, for $12 more, you know, I'm getting almost 3-1 on my money. Why not just call with this 6-7 here and see what happens? You know, who knows? So you want to make it expensive for those guys.
Well, and I also want to know what the undergun player is playing with. I mean, generally you're going to assume it's a strong hand, aces, kings, or something like that. But people play a lot of things for undergun, so, you know, you're right. You pop it to 40 there or so. He's got aces and kings. It's probably going to get raised. And then you're able to, you know, further define his hand.
Yeah.
All right, well, our hero decides just to call to disguise his hand.
Hmm. I don't like that.
He does admit that it's his first mistake.
Oh, he missed that? All right, well, then there you go. Because that right there, you know, this is only going to come back to bite him on the hiney.
Problem with disguising your hand here is that you still need some help on this flop. You know, any ace comes, any king comes, it's going to be hard for you to... you're going to have to represent that at that point.
Mm.
And, you know, the chances of flopping set are fairly remote. So then you got to hope for an all-under board. And when you get all under boards, then you get in all kinds of other trouble here. If you're right, if you get, if the blinds come along, now you get a bunch of people in the hands.
And, you know, another thing, too, is that we tend to do this analysis based on by-the-book stuff. Yeah. And the reason we do that is because we really don't know the players behind us. We don't know the players we're playing with. All we got is a few typed-up words from a listener. So I'm not saying that a call there is a bad idea. If you knew that the button was the type of person who would love to squeeze here and may do that because he's shown a propensity for doing it before, you know, or something like that. But traditionally, this is a pretty straightforward hand, I think, and that's why you raise with it, and you shouldn't have just called. Right?
Yeah. And, I guess you are disguising your hand here, but when I use that phrase, I'm more thinking, you know, when I flop a flush or something.
Yeah.
You know, something where it's I've got really a truly made hand there, and people would be not thinking that I have that. Right now, no one has any idea what anybody has pre-flop.
Right.
So, I mean, it is disguised, but it's kind of like putting a fake mustache on rather than full body makeup, right? All right, the cutoff folds, the button calls, the blinds get out of the way.
See, there you go. Now, even more so, now you've got someone with position behind you thinking he's getting a good price to call, 2-1 on his money, maybe a little more with that dead money. So now you're out of position the rest of the hand, too. That stinks.
All right, we see a flop of 8 of clubs, 6 of diamonds, 4 of hearts, and surprisingly, the pre-flop raiser checks to him.
Well, I think we're going to want to know what the hell's going on out there, so we're probably going to bet into this with probably a $45 pot, so I don't know. I bet like 30. Yeah, about 30 or so.
Yeah, I think we actually got it. We got to get something out of here. We got to find out whether this under the gun is just weak and scared now, or slow playing or something. We got to kind of take control of the hand from the button, maybe get him out of the way, unless he's got something weaker. Whatever all the thoughts goes into here, I think it comes out to a bet.
Yeah.
All right, and that's exactly what our hero does. He thinks it's time to take control of the hand. He bets 35.
That's about right. I mean, you know, pot size is about 45, and two-thirds is about 30, so 35 is okay, I guess.
Actually, probably 49 minus 3. Yeah, you're right, 45, yep. All right, the button thinks about it for a minute and makes the call, and the preflop aggressor folds. Wow, he must have been just trying to steal off that point. $15, you get two callers, get that guy aboard, and you check fold.
Man, he's king. Guys get ace king, they miss, they've frayed the bet. They got two callers behind them out of position the rest of the way. Could be ace king.
All right, so we're heads up and now out of position.
Yeah.
And our hero says, at this point, I'm thinking he could be on ace eight suited, or maybe a flop set or straight, but I can't be afraid of the monster on the bed. Well, you know, you always can be afraid.
Sure, you could be afraid. Go with it.
Yeah, I mean, you're not allowed to hide your chattering teeth there. I mean, go ahead. You can be afraid.
It's hand of the week. Be afraid. okay, I'm totally eliminating 5-7 from this guy's holding. I don't think that this guy, just because he's in position, is going to call $15. And there's an under-the-gun razor here. I don't think 5-7 is in this guy's holding. A set is very likely. Or something like nines is likely, too. So you still got some homework to do here. Queens, most of the time, is good here. But a set is possible, so we'll see how it goes in the turn. Although I don't know if I would bet the turn if, say... you know, I don't know. I don't know if I...
To me, I got my information right now.
Yeah, that call means he thinks he can beat us, but...
I got the other gun out of the way, so he doesn't have anything that I'm worried about. And now we got a call, which, again, set is very likely. Could be, like you said, nines, tens, jacks, or something. So, at this point, I mean, I'm probably going to exercise some pot control on this turn and see what my opponent does.
The thing that I hate about this is he could be floating. That's the thing that bothers me the most. He sees... Yep. He could float. He saw the under-the-gun check, so you have a feel on the under-the-gun's going to check and fold. So now he's just saying, you know what? For $35 here, I can float and steal this pot from this guy if he checks the turn. So that's what makes me a little nervous about this, that we could be being bluffed here too. But, you know, a set is not out of the realm because somebody easily can go set mining with a pair of sixes here. So
absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Well, the turn is the nine of spades. So we're bored now. Eight of clubs, six of diamonds, four of hearts. Nine of spades, so it completes that very likely 7-10 straight.
Well, if you're playing Daryl Negreanu, he's got 10-7. Yeah, that nine seems pretty harmless. This is gonna suck. Of course, if he had pocket nines, now he's turned a monster.
Right.
God, so let's see. We bet 35, so that's 70 more in the pot. So you're looking at about 115 in the pot. Oh man. I'm probably.
It's 115.
Yeah, I'm probably going to bet about 50.
All right, so you're not going to give up control here.
No, I don't think I want to give up control. I feel like this is the street where they float to steal on, and I think that I still have an overpair to this board. And he could be very well correct with his ace eight assessment. You know, ace eight of diamonds or something like that. So I got to bet one more time. If he calls again. Then I think I'm shutting it down on the river, you know, unless a queen comes, you know. I think that at this point, we have no reason to believe we're behind. A call could be anything. A call could be tens, nines. Now it's a set of nines, but I mean, it could be jacks, like you said. It could be, who knows? Maybe he did call.
Maybe sevens or something, too.
Yeah, pocket sevens. Now he's got a straight draw on top of it. So he could think that we were stealing because the under the gun checked the flop. You know, we could have ace-king, too, in this guy's mind, and we were just continuation buffing or whatever. So I have to bet here and see what happens, though.
All right, so he says the only hand that would have improved would have been 10-7, which seems unlikely. Pocket nines are 8-9. He says the last two are possible, but I don't think much has changed. Pot is 115. I don't want to lose control of the hand, so I bet 65.
Yeah, that's half the pot, essentially. A little more than that, but
probably get the same information with a little bit less. Right?
Yeah, you probably could have gotten the same information with a $40 or $50 bet. I don't disagree with that bet though, and I didn't think about 8-9. 8-9 could be a hand here, a suited connector, and in position for $15 is not unheard of. So 8-9 could be beating us now too. So that kind of sucks.
All right, so the button thinks for a couple seconds, makes the call. The river is the six of clubs, and our final board is eight of clubs, six of diamonds, four of hearts, nine of spades, six of clubs. So we just counterfeited the 8-9 if that was like...
Yeah, that. I mean, if that was the case, that's a good card for us. But again, if the guy had a set of eights or a set of fours, now he's filled up and definitely not afraid of us. Yeah. So that sucks.
245 right now. And we have 140 left.
Jeez. I think I'm going to check the river and see what happens. I can't bet again. You know, especially because what if he did have A6? And now he's got three sixes. So a lot of hands beat us now. You know,
let me ask you this. This is where I think this hand gets really difficult now. If you check here, how much are you willing to call?
I was hoping you wouldn't ask that question.
Because that's what you got to think about here. I mean, because if you're willing to call 140, then you probably should be putting it in now and giving your opponent an opportunity to fold. But really, at this point, if someone calls here, I got to think we have them beat.
So here's the deal.
Or do you put in a little bit, try to set the price here for you?
Defensive bet. Because if you're willing, when you say if you're willing to call, what did he bet on the street? Did we find out?
Bet yet. Yeah. No, we haven't bet yet.
We haven't bet yet. Okay. If let's say you're willing to call $75. If you bet 75, you're not going to know what that river was. You're not going to know what it is if he raises you, because then you're going to fold.
Well, that's a different story. What I'm saying, though, is if you decide you're willing to put your 140 in, in your mind you're like, you know what, I'm not laying this hand down.
Oh.
And if that's the case, you might as well just put the 140 in right now.
If that number
is anything less than 140, then you're right.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't understand your question. Okay, so yeah, so if you're willing to call off your whole stack, if you check called, you might as well shove it to put pressure on him.
Right.
Yeah. And just hope he doesn't have the mortal nuts.
I would prefer to try to set my own price here, and you know, he's been just calling us the entire time.
Yeah.
And maybe he's ready to spring into action now, but I would rather try to set my price, take the chance that I can set my price, have them call, and obviously hope I win the hand, but if not, at least cost my... what I want to do here, obviously I want to win the hand. Or if I can't win the hand, I want to get the showdown as cheaply as possible, right?
Yeah, my thinking is that if you put out, say, 70, he'll know that you can't fold now. Because you put 50% of your stack out there and so much money out there, you couldn't fold for 70. So that he's thinking that if there's no way he can shove bluff you. So he has to have a hand. So if he's going to raise, you know you're beat.
That's a good point. Yep.
You know? So maybe bet 70 here to try to control the pot size and to send the message that you can't fold, so that way he can't bluff you on the end if he was somehow drawing with pair of sevens. And then that way if he shoves, then okay, you have to call, but you know you're probably beat. I think you have to call at least.
I like that plan. Yep.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I don't know. I think we're screwed by not raising preflop, but...
All right, well, our hero pushes out 85. So essentially the same thing you're
same
saying.
Same thing, yeah, just...
A little more money than they need to make the point. Villain thinks for a second and then shoves the stack in. And of course, he has us covered.
All right, so he shoved on this. Okay. Yeah, we have to call, obviously.
Yeah, obviously we
55 left or
put the flare out that we're not going to fold here, right? So, all right, guys. We mutter to him, do you really have a set? Make the call. He turns over 8-8. Flop set in a riverboat.
Do you think a raised preflop gets those aces, to, eights to fold? If you make it 45 or 50,
give me to fold. But I'm a tight player. I'm not going to call a raise from an under the gun and then a re-raise with pocket eights.
Yeah, I don't know if I would. If I had like 300 in front of me, I don't know if I'd call a sixth of my stack with eights. I have position, but really, you still at that point you still have the under the gun behind you who had raised preflop, and he had a chance to open the betting up again if you just called a raise of us as the dealer guy on the button. So. I don't know. I know I've folded eights in that. If someone makes it 50 after someone making it 15 under the gun and they re-raise the under the gun player, you're telling me in the whole table that you have a better hand than... So I really want to set mine for 45 or 50 bucks? I don't know. So I think he might have gotten the eights to fold.
I think so.
Yeah. And his first mistake was his biggest.
All right, now here it says, now that you think I totally butchered the hand, I'll reveal that I was the button. and thrilled to see this guy lose a stack with me with only an overpair.
Oh, so he didn't make the mistake.
Yeah, he says, it's been a while since we heard of the dude with the villain hero switcheroo, so I thought I'd play it out this way. You know, it, what's great about this play, too, is that if you lose the hand, you can send it in as the switcheroo.
Yeah.
I'm not going to know. I wasn't there, right? but he says, I see this happen all the time when people overvalue big overpairs. The two big mistakes that I saw with this hand was not re-raising preflop.
Yay.
And leading out on the river. Now, I don't know about leading on the river. I mean, we talked about that. I think it depends on how much you lead out on the river.
Exactly.
But what he says is, if he has me beat on the river, then I'm folding most of the time to that bet. However, if he check calls the river, then he'll end up saving more when he's behind and making more when the button is just trying to steal on the river with a misdraw.
So he's also admitting then that he would have folded his eights to a re-raise preflop, because he said that was the mistake that guy made. So if he made that mistake, that means that he would have folded his eights, our hero, who ends up now switcherooing on us. So a re-raise is definitely what should have happened, and the eights would have hit the muck, apparently. Very interesting.
All right, Jay, well, we appreciate you, if that's your real name, we appreciate you sending your hand of the week, and encourage everybody else to send hands of the weeks to podcast@antiupmagazine.com. And, Jay, we're going to send you a t-shirt from PMS Pokerware, which sells hilarious shirts for gals and guys in the Antiup store at antiupstore.com.
Hands of the weeks?
Hands of the weeks.
So there's plural weeks in these hands.
So there's lots of hands being played every week.
I'm Chris Cosenza.
I'm Scott Lark.
We'll see you at the tables.
AnteUp is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnteUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnteUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.